lot of people ask me how I know so much about sports. Well, I don't know so much about sports, but one of the things I've always said is if I don't know something, I'm going to find somebody that does. And so when it comes to baseball, I always enjoy my conversations with Phil Garner. Phil, of course, managed a number of years, double-digit years, with the Brewers, the Tigers, and the Astros. He took Houston to the World Series where they lost to the White Sox, but he also played the game as an infielder for 16 seasons, and he did win a championship when he played on the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates ball club. Phil, I came across an article in which you were quoted in it. The quote from you was, "Nolan Ryan told me he'd throw 175 pitchers or more," and it was all about pitch count. And that's something that a lot of people talk about today. And so I wonder if you can give me a perspective about what was thought of pitch counts back when you were playing and also along the way as you were managing.
Well, it's a hot topic today, obviously, with Strasburg and what's going on there. And it seems like, you know, that it's not a matter of if a pitcher is going to get injured. It's just a matter of a question of when. And so we're always trying to figure out, you know, is it the workload? Is it mechanics? What causes pitchers to break down? And when I started playing, pitch count was not I don't even know if that was in the vernacular in baseball at that time. Yes, Nolan told me that there were a lot of games that he threw well over 150 pitches, and he thought that perhaps the most he'd ever thrown was maybe 200 pitches in a game. I can't imagine a guy doing that today. And so, it seems like I recall Fernando Valenzuela throwing in the neighborhood 140 or 50 pitches in a bunch of his starts too. But a lot of guys in those days threw a number of pitches. Of course, closers didn't just pitch one inning. Raleigh Fingers and Gossage and those guys pitched 2-3 innings, whatever it took. You know, you expected your starter to go longer, and you expected your relievers to pitch longer. So I think about the time I started managing, 92, I started counting pitches, not for anything other than I was trying to figure out if I could determine when a pitcher had kind of reached his limit, if there was a way to put the data together and say, well, by the time a guy gets to 90 pitches, it looks like he either his velocity drops or he starts giving up hits or he starts to wane a little bit. And so we counted pitches from the time spring training started. We counted warm-up pitches. We counted all the pitches thrown in the bullpen in spring training and on the field in spring training right on through the end of the year. Billy Castro was my bullpen coach in those days, and he kept a big spreadsheet, and we did it. And I found it inconclusive. There were some guys that sort of gave you an indication that boy, if they got to 85 pitches, look out, because that 86 pitch, it was probably going to be a three-run homer. But in terms of injuries, I was never able to determine. And I asked this question many times. Tell me where the point is that a pitcher is going to break down. Of course, everybody says, well, it depends. Well, that means they don't know. Nobody really knows. So it's a great debate. And I think perhaps the trainers have taken that debate and own it right now, and because we're living by the pitch counts these days.
Also, do you find that managers and people in organizations use it as a crutch, maybe as an explanation for something that happens that they don't know why it happened?
Yeah, I do. I really believe that it gives everybody an easy explanation, you know. But I think it makes sense for younger pitchers to sort of watch the pitch count. I think that I think it should be a soft number, not necessarily a hard number. But clearly, I think they handled Strasburger the right way. If a young pitcher, I think he should be limited somewhere to 80 to 90, 100 pitches in there. And if he has a couple of starts where he's really laboring, but he only throws 80 pitches, Maybe get him out of there. Don't let him go if you think his limit's 100. If he's struggling, throwing a lot of balls, because obviously something's wrong with his mechanics, and that's when your injuries have a tendency to go up, in my opinion. And if you got a kid that maybe you have a 100-pitch limit on him, but he's cruising, he's throwing the ball where he wants to, he's breaking balls nice, he's not laboring on the mound, maybe you let him go to 115 pitches because he's obviously in a groove that night. So I think it makes some sense for us to continue the education process, but I think it's a mistake to blame injuries solely on well, the guy threw a lot of pitches. Of course, you know, at some point he's going to throw a lot of pitches, and is, you know, if you let a guy throw a lot of pitches, he's going to get injured more than likely. But I'm not so sure that I think the overall load is what counts, not just pitch limit.
You know, I think back to that great game that was played at Candlestick Park where you had Warren Spahn against Juan Marichal. It goes 16 innings. They both go the distance in that game, and yet there was nothing that came out of that negative as well. And I even see a figure here. No pitcher has matched Ryan's 127 average from 1989. So I just can't figure this out. And especially those two guys, Spahn and Marichal, were up in age as well, and it didn't seem to hurt them.
Well, and I do believe that there's a couple of things, and Ron, I could talk to you for 2 days on this and show you what I mean, you know, verbally. But if you look back to how Juan Marichal and Warren Spahn, their deliveries, they would begin their delivery, and then the first thing you would do was rock back. You remember their deliveries, they would their head would tilt back. And they would sort of scoot their rear end, their hip pocket, towards the plate while their head was leaning back, and they threw over the top, and somewhere in the 60s, and my research took me to the Dodgers, but I can't say that this is exactly true. This is what I found out. We started this upright delivery where you would balance on the rubber, if you remember guys doing it. And the Dodgers used to put guys on 2x4s and have them to raise their pitching, you know, their lead leg up and balance, and then break their hands and go to the plate. The difference in that for me is that pitchers have a tendency when you do the balance and go forward and not tilt back, they have a tendency to rush. And when you rush, the motion that makes you raise your arm quickly, your pitching arm, quickly to get in position to pitch is the rotator muscles. And for me, that's the major difference in the old timers pitching mechanics and the new pitching mechanics. And so I think that's one of the reasons that we have a lot of issues today. And part of one of the reasons we had to change is because the running game became more prominent. In the olden days, you didn't have to be four guys on your team that were going to try to steal a base on you every time you turn around. Well, we had to speed that up a little bit, and so that's one of the processes one of the ways that you did it. But I believe the old-fashioned delivery is easier on the arm.
What about the type of pitches that pitchers are throwing today? I mean, we talk about the split-fingered fastball and everything, but I remember Elroy Face throwing that forkball and everything, and I don't know whether the pitchers – back in that era, also threw the ball 95, 96 miles an hour or not. But I'm wondering whether that has anything to do with it as well, Phil.
Well, it possibly, but old-time guys, I've talked to a bunch of the old-time guys, and pitchers threw in-shoots and out-shoots, they called them. They were sinkers and cutters, and they threw spitballs, which is the same thing as your split-finger fastball today, you know. So they didn't necessarily split their fingers, but they had the same action. They threw it, and the ball slipped out of their hand. So I don't think that it's the different type pitches. I really don't believe that's part of it. I think it tends more towards delivery. I think that lifestyles has a lot to do with it. I think that in those days, kids grew up doing more common labor and more than kids do today. And so, you know, you've heard the phrase country strong. I think what happens is that your tendons and joint ligaments tend to be a little bit stronger when you've grown up doing common labor as opposed to kids who don't do common labor and end up going to the gyms and working out. I think that has a big something to do with it too. I think we could have some more studies on that and come up conclusively.
Phil, thanks a lot, my friend. I appreciate it. I always enjoy connecting with Phil Garner. He managed for 15 years with the Brewers, the Tigers, and the Astros. He took the Houston Astros to the World Series when they were swept out of there by the White Sox. And He had been an infielder for 16 seasons. He played with Oakland for four, Pittsburgh for four, Houston for six, Los Angeles one, and San Francisco for one. And, of course, those 4 years at Pittsburgh, very special to him because in 1979 he played on that championship team where they called him We Are Family. So Phil Garner, a man that managed the game and played the game, and so always when I have a question about baseball, he is one of the people that I go to because he can break it down so that most people can understand it, and I can understand it as well. And so I appreciate him jumping in here. We were talking about pitch counts and why pitch counts have become so important in Major League Baseball today. We'll take a break, come back on the other side as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.